no helicopters have been procured for me to go to golf course. Thank you.
I've never said he wasn't a great politician. I'm just saying he's a
off. He's listening to you.
How'd you play out there today?
Well, I found the conditions challenging, mostly because there's no grass on the golf course, but there never has been.
I'm thinking about the swag bag, and I have high hopes for the swag bag.
When you got three crevices on the green, your course is trash.
What is happening, folks? Welcome back to the Beltway Golfer Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Dixon. This is episode 95. Got a lot going on. Got a magazine that's inching closer to coming out, Beltway Golfer Magazine. If you're not familiar, we are launching a premium print magazine all about golf and the stories and the culture and the people and the places around the DMV and beyond in the greater Mid-Atlantic. Our first issue really has a focus that's kind of tight to the DMV. Really appreciate everybody that has already subscribed or purchased the first issue. If you haven't, go to beltwaygolfer.com, click on magazine, or go to beltwaygolfer.com/magazine. You can purchase the first issue or subscribe there. $34 gets you a one-year subscription. We're doing two issues per year, a spring and a fall. Again, this is a premium print mag. They'll show up in your mailbox, 80 pages plus cover. And we've got some great stories that if you're into golf, if you live in this area, I'm sure will resonate and hopefully can put out something that you get really excited that'll show up in your mailbox a couple times a year. So we're getting really close to getting to the printer, and hopefully that first issue will be in mailboxes before the end of May. If that changes, I will certainly let people know. But I appreciate everyone that has already subscribed. Again, if you haven't, go to beltwaygolfer.com. Our guest today on the episode is Mr. Ryan McCarthy. This week, he is competing in the Belhaven Four Ball, which he is one half of a team that won it last year. He's the defending champion, so he's going to be down at Belhaven Country Club in Alexandria, Virginia, defending his title there. He's also the defending champion of the Mid-Atlantic mid-amateur, which last year he won at South River, and he'll be defending that title later this summer. And if you don't know the name, he is the older brother of PGA Tour pro Denny McCarthy. Ryan is heavily involved up at his home club, Argyle Country Club. So I had a great conversation with Ryan. I appreciate him coming on the show. Before we get to that conversation, two sponsors. First, Golfdom. Most folks in this area are probably familiar with Golfdom. If not, go check them out. If you haven't been in a while, they've got as much stuff as ever. I was in there last week. I actually did a guest spot on the Capital Golf Gang podcast, which is run by a longtime local sports radio host, Steve Zabin. And he actually tapes his podcast in one of the hitting bays or fitting studios at Golfdom in their Tyson's Corner location. And on the way out after taping the podcast, I was chatting with general manager Matt Trenton. And on one of their display areas, I noticed that they had several copies of this year's official Masters program. And if you listen to our last podcast here, I went down to the Masters this year, both Saturday and Sunday. But I didn't see the program. I didn't buy a program. I didn't see it in the merch shop down at Augusta National. And so I grabbed a couple as I was walking out, gave one to the guy I went down to the Masters with. But it kind of exemplifies in a little way of what Golfdom's about. They kind of go the extra mile, finding things that matter to local golfers and to golfers in general. And for me, that I hadn't actually seen that. So I was excited to grab a couple. But Golfdom, you know, on top of everything that you would expect from them, which is top of the line, latest and greatest from all the major manufacturers, all the equipment, all the accessories, the ability to get fitted by top of the line professionals in any of their hitting studios. But also they've got apparel brands that you're not going to find in other regional brick and mortar stores. And they've got a killer used selection in the back right corner of their Tyson's Corner location, at least their back nine studio, which seems to be overflowing with great used clubs if you want to go that route. So make sure to go to their website, worldwidegolfshops.com/Golfdom, or visit any of the three locations, Tyson's Corner, Annapolis, or Rockville. I also want to shout out our other sponsor who's been a sponsor of the show for a while, the Golf Yards, getting ready to open. They're kind of somewhat on a similar timeline as the magazine, coincidentally enough. They are, I believe, getting ready to open, you know, anytime the next, you know, they're getting ready to open this spring. I was able to go out there about a week ago and see everything coming along, and it looks fantastic, state of the art. They've got 7 TrackMans already set up. They've got 2 huge short game areas. One is more just for putting. It's got all the latest tech that kind of shines down on the green, alignment, games, you name it. They've got a well putt area, but then they also have a second short game area that is really for chipping, and they've got a bunker, indoor bunker with real sand that you work on your short game. They've got a little lounge area, and then they've got a kind of a gym that's got all the latest and greatest tech to work out. So it's a membership-based club right in the Ballston neighborhood of Arlington. I'm excited to use it myself because it kind of pairs working on your swing, working on your short game, and getting in shape all in one spot. So excited for that. There's still a founding membership options going. So go check out thegolfyards.com because they're getting ready to open soon and the place looks great again in Arlington, Virginia. So thank you to them. That's it. Let's get to the conversation with Ryan. And one piece to point out before we do that, towards the back half of our conversation, we talk a little bit about Argyle Country Club and their ability to foster really good junior players, especially players that go on to play at the next level in college. One of our articles in the inaugural issue is about that program specific and does a deeper dive into the talent that Argyle has fostered and created. So another reason to grab a copy or subscribe to Beltway Golfer Magazine, especially if you enjoyed this conversation, want to learn more about that program, beltwaygolfer.com is the place to check it out. That is all. Let's get to the conversation with Ryan. And good luck to Ryan this week in the Belhaven four ball, defending his title with Pat McCormick. Here it is. Episode 95 of the Beltway Golfer Podcast. Enjoy. Mr. Ryan McCarthy, how are you? Thanks for joining the Beltway Golfer Podcast.
Good, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Several reasons I wanted to have you on, but one big one was this week is the Belhaven four ball out of Belhaven Country Club,
yep.
Of which you are, you and your partner, is it Pat McCormick?
Yeah, Pat McCormick.
Are defending champions.
Yeah.
How many times have you played in the Belhaven four ball?
Oof. So we probably started playing. We graduated college in 2012. We played 2013 was our first year.
Wow.
So we've played every year except one year we made the U.S. four ball, so we didn't play. So I guess this will be like 12 or 13 times that we've played in it now. Probably not 12.
And Pat's been your partner every time?
Every time, yep.
Was he a college teammate of yours?
Yeah, he was my college roommate and college teammate all 4 years at Loyola.
Oh wow! So you guys go way back. Did you know him before? Did you know him before Loyola? Or did you meet him?
No, he's from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So the first time I ever really met him was when we both got to Loyola freshman year.
So for folks that don't know, what's the Belhaven four ball all about?
It's a competitive four ball event, 54 holes, cut after 36. You know, it's got a good mix of being very competitive and kind of, you know, really good camaraderie, just to like, you know, good hang after the round out on like kind of the patio there. People drinking, you know, people can drink on the course. You can take it as seriously or unseriously as you want to take it, I guess you could call it. You know, if you start playing pretty poorly and you're in the second or third round, you know, you're not winning the tournament. I mean, you can do with that, you know, what you want. We had a couple of years like that. In the past 5 or 6 years, we've been really competitive. I think we finished in the top 3 every year for the last like 6 years, and we finally won last year. So always a handful of really, really good teams of, you know, amateurs from the area, sometimes a really good amateur from the area, and then, you know, maybe a brother or a friend from out of the area that's another good player. So, you know, very competitive.
Yeah, and it's there's some prestige around it as well. I mean, it's been going on for 76 years.
Yeah, I think last year we won the 75th Belhaven four ball, I think is what we won.
Is it invite only, or can anyone? I mean, I saw the teams have to have a combined handicap of 7 or less, but can anyone just kind of sign up, or is it invite only?
I think they used to have a qualifier for it. And now I think it's like invite only for a certain group of people that they call exempt players, maybe. And then they kind of open it up, and then they have a committee that would, you know, picks the however many last teams to fill the field.
So you mentioned there's a good hang afterwards, you know, the amateur, especially the mid-amateur circuit. Because this is not mid-am necessarily, because there's amateurs
involved. No. It could be like there's like high school kids, you right. know. It's a wide variety of who's playing just an amateur tournament. And they have a senior division as well.
Which correct me if I'm wrong, your dad regularly plays in as well, right?
Yeah, he's played in it a bunch. My Uncle Mike's played in it a bunch. Mike McCarthy. And there's always a handful of really good senior teams.
Now, oftentimes the mid-am circuit is referred to as the cocktail circuit. Would this be a part of that, or you wouldn't consider that?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I like to go and have a good time. I mean, I'm gonna sure. I want to play well when I'm out there, but you know, either play well or play poorly. I mean, there's always, you know, I know a bunch of the guys playing. There's, you know, the same, call it 20 to 30 guys that play every year, I would say. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes that might be the only time you've seen them all year. It might be the first time. It's a great way to kick off the year, you know, state team's kind of the first thing. And then Bellhaven's your first real, like, event, I would call it. So it's the first time you might see a lot of people since last September, October. So just kind of catching up with people, having a drink, hanging out, you know. Yeah, I'd say it's definitely got a cocktail piece to it.
Sure. What's your prep for a Bellhaven two ball, or is there much? Are you getting down playing practice rounds there, or you guys just show up and play?
No practice rounds. I mean, we've played the course so many times. I mean, we know all the shots, all the pins, know where you can and can't hit it. I would say this week, so I'm going to try to touch a club today. Maybe go hit balls for 40 minutes if I have a window this afternoon before. Doing a bunch of family and kids stuff. And then tomorrow it looks like it's going to rain all afternoon. So I don't know that I'll really get to practice tomorrow or play. Yeah. So luckily coming off, you know, the last couple weeks, playing the state team, making it to the finals with Argyle, have played a lot of, you know, important holes, hit big shots. So that sort of stuff. I think that's the best prep you can really get going into, you know, an event like this. Yeah. You've hit putts that matter. You've hit tee shots that matter already this year. So maybe it kind of just calms you down a little bit going into the event.
Now, I should know this, but I know Bellhaven's been, over the last couple of years, they did a bunch of renovations to their clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And I know they're planning on doing renovations to the course itself, I believe with Joel Wyman. I could have that wrong.
Yeah, I believe. So they started doing, I think, they were going to do, I think, 6 or 7 holes this winter. I think they only did 3 because of the weather.
Oh, so they did. Do you know which holes they did?
16.
Okay. So yeah, they're going to do it like kind of piecemeal, where like every offseason.
Yeah, I think it sounds like they're going to pick back up this winter, maybe, as weather, you know, after the season. So I think they're mostly doing bunkers is what I understand, bunkers and green surrounds.
Got it. And so you know his work. We'll get into your being on the heavily involved with Argyle Country Club, which Joel Wyman also really did. But just a quick kind of let's backtrack real quick. Why don't you give listeners kind of your golf resume? You know, you mentioned you played at Loyola. What walk us through kind of a short version of your golf resume?
Yeah, sure. Started playing golf at a really young age. I've been at Argyle Country Club my whole life. So when we were younger, like when I was, you know, I was 3 or 4, my grandfather, my dad's dad, was the junior golf director at Argyle. So we started playing. They had 2-holers, 4-holers, 6-holers, 9-holers, 18-holers, kind of as junior golf. So I started playing golf at a really young age, me, my brother, cousins, friends. So we grew up playing, a ton of golf in the summer. And then went to high school, went to Gonzaga. I played baseball my first 2 years in the spring at Gonzaga because same time as golf. So then, you know, I would still play tournament golf in the summer. I played a ton of golf, but I played a lot of baseball then too. Then my junior year, kind of figured that my 5'8 frame wasn't going anywhere playing baseball. So switched over, I started playing for the golf team my junior year.
Was that decision in high school in part because playing high school golf wasn't necessary if you were going to still try to be competitive golf since you were playing these other tournaments?
little bit. I also just like, I got to the point where I just realized baseball, I wasn't going to take it that much further. Like, and I was, and I played pretty well that summer. Like my, after my sophomore year of high school, I played well in a couple of tournaments and played some other stuff like my junior year in the fall. And then over like winter break, I traveled for an event or two and played well. So I was like, I just decided that I was going to play golf, and worked out. I won WCACs my junior year. So our team was really good. We won WCACs and Metros. And then, played golf my last 2 years at Gonzaga. And then went to Loyola, played there all 4 years. We were in the MAC then, the Metro Atlantic, not that they're in the Patriot League now. Right. So we won the Metro, the MAC every single year, played in NCAAs all 4 years.
I don't know the program that well, but it seems to me, anytime I'm looking up guys, I see Loyola's name pops up quite a bit. I mean, they had a serious golf program.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were good. Like when I was went there as a freshman, then my junior year, Chris Beloga, I don't know if you know Chris, Yeah, Chris is a really good player. He became the coach my junior year, and so he's really improved the program. So that would have been 2010-11. So he's been there 15 years now. He's really improved the program, facilities, schedule, players, you know, a lot of different things. And he's really pushed that program further. He's got a lot of good players that play for them. They got guys that have, you know, playing on the Corn Ferry Tour, like Brandon Berry and stuff like that. And so, he's had a lot of success there. So, yep. And then I played at Loyola, and then I've been playing kind of amateur and mid-am golf. I've played in 3 USJ events, last year I had probably one of my better years as an amateur in a while. I won the Belhaven four ball and the Mid-Atlantic mid-am. So, yeah, it was a nice year. I've had some other good tournaments throughout the way, but wins stick out.
Yeah. Was there a time early on, you and Ryan made the U.S. Amateur four ball back in 2015,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the first year that they had it, me and Pat made it. It was at Olympic Club. And so we went out there and we played great. We finished like fourth or fifth in stroke play. We went out. We won our first round match. And then we lost in the second round, I think, on the 18th hole. And then, you know, we kind of were like, oh, man, we're going to play in this event every year. Like, we're just going to keep going. And then we've never made it back. So that's how it goes. Yeah.
Sure.
That's golf. Sometimes, you know, you can't take anything for granted.
Coming out of Loyola, did you have any inkling where like I'm gonna give being a pro a shot, or was that never really in your mindset?
Never in my mind. I think I was, you know, somewhat lucky that I had my brother as a barometer, so I caddied for him. And at that point, when I was a senior leaving Loyola, I'd already caddied for him in probably 8 or 9 USJ events and US juniors and USAMs. So I had the privilege, I guess, of going to these events and seeing how good the golf was. And like, I've always been a good player, but I mean, that level of golf is extremely high, and to make a living at it is tough. So I was an accounting major, and then I worked for a CPA firm for 3.5 years, got my CPA. So that's kind of the route I went. So my golf game definitely declined pretty sharply right after college.
Understandably. Yeah. So how old were you? For those that don't know, you're the older brother of PGA Tour player Denny McCarthy. What is the age gap there?
Yeah, I'm 3 years older than him. So I'm 36 and Denny's 33.
So at what age, you just mentioned, like, you kind of saw that barometer, seeing him playing some of those tournaments. What age were you? You're like, oh wow, my little brother's pretty good.
Well, he made it to the U.S. Junior when he was 13. Just coming out of eighth grade, going into his freshman year of high school, and then I guess it would have been. I mean, he made it to the semifinal. He was the number one ranked junior in the world. His going into his senior year of high school, and I was caddying for him. We lost in the U.S. Junior to Justin Thomas in 19 holes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, beat in that tournament, he beat Grayson Murray in the first round, Curtis Thompson in the second round, and then lost to Justin Thomas. So that was like Spieth was in that. It was Nick Dunlap was in that. I mean, it was a stacked, not Nick Dunlap, who's the other Alabama, Corey Whitsitt, all those guys. So okay. That was a stacked U.S. junior. Gavin Hall was the medalist. I don't know if you remember that name. Really good player out of New York that went to Texas.
So what did the family look like? So you have you, Denny. You mentioned before we started, your sister just got married this weekend.
Yeah, my sister Christina. So she played lacrosse at James Madison. So she is born in 1995. So she's 5 years younger than me. And then my youngest sister, Michaela, played lacrosse at Virginia Tech. And so she's the youngest.
And so what are those early days of golf? Did your sisters, are they, you know, they're both obviously lacrosse players. Were they golfers?
A little bit. My sister Christina plays a lot of golf now in her adult life. They both played junior golf. They weren't like competitive golfers kind of growing up, but like me and Denny, but they definitely played.
But so I saw some note somewhere that your dad played college golf or no?
No, he played, I think, for a year at JMU, at James Madison. And then my uncle played at James Madison, my Uncle Mike. They still played, like, you know, growing up, they were playing, you know, A-team. We would go out and watch their A-team matches. They were playing club championships, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, also just being at Argyle, we, at a young age, we started playing in money games with all the older A-team guys. And I think that's, you know, how we started getting better at a young age. I was probably 12 and Denny was like 9 or 10. And we were playing, you know, putting in our $40 from our dad to play in the Friday game. And, you know, you start seeing better players and, you know, you get better when you're around better players. You just see what they do. You see how they hit certain shots. You see how they manage. They see how, you know, speed. Like when you're a 13-year-old, you don't really 100% maybe understand like speed control on putts and different clubs around the greens and leaving the ball below the hole and all that sort of stuff. So the more you play with good players, you pick up on what they do and how they shoot better scores.
Do you remember how young, I mean, being a part of a family that is where golf is so ingrained with your family, with your dad and your uncle, you, your brother, you had mentioned before we started recording, you've got a couple cousins that play on the Columbia team. Like obviously golf is huge in your family. You know, do you remember what age, like you became like, you know, I'm thinking about my 10-year-old who plays golf, but he's not, you know, he's not, you know, he's not playing anywhere near bogey golf. But at what point, like how young were you like, you know, competing with your dad, for instance?
Probably in high school, like probably my sophomore, junior year of high school, I would say I would started like, you know, shooting a lot of good scores in the mid to low 70s. You know, so that was probably when I really realized I, you know, could kind of do it. I was like, you know, when we were 13 and 14, you know, 12, 13, 14, always just trying to like, we went out like, oh, we want to break 80. We want to break, you know, it was all about breaking 80. You know, you get those different barriers. And then like you start breaking 80 consistently. It's like, okay, well now I'm shooting mid to high 70s. I want to shoot par. And then like, you know, how do I get better to shoot par? It's like, then you start shooting around par more often. Oh man, I really want to shoot in the 60s. And it's just like, it's just kind of that, you know, that stepping stone progression of, you know, wanting to get better. You know, we also at our, we had just so many kids, you know, that made playing golf fun. Like on any given day, we'd get dropped off up there, or, you know, when I started driving, we'd drive me and Denny up there. We'd be up there for the whole day. And there'd be anywhere from 6 to 10 kids of just other families up at Argyle. And we would just play golf all day, chipping contests, putting contests, hitting balls on the range. When I look back, we walk 36 holes on like 100-degree days. I don't know how we did it, but like, you know, we were obsessed with golf and obsessed with getting better at golf.
It sounds like a heck of an upbringing. It sounds like a lot of fun, a lot of fun summer days.
Oh yeah.
So how'd your cousins end up over at Columbia? I mean, your Argyle's so ingrained in your family.
My Uncle Mike, he married into kind of a Columbia membership. And so they have a Columbia membership and an Argyle membership. So they've been playing for the Columbia team. So, yeah.
And do I have this right? I only know this because I have a buddy that he doesn't anymore, but lived in the Manor neighborhood. Your folks live over in the Manor neighborhood, right?
Yep, they live over there. Yep.
Does that ruffle some feathers? I mean, isn't there's a little bit of a friendly rivalry there, right, between Manor and Argyle?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we've played a lot of tight 18 matches. We played them in 18 this year, and I think what was it, the round of 16? Yeah, so we played them this year. Yeah, they moved there like when I was in college. So, but we've always been an Argyle family.
So now back to present day. You know, obviously you're still a legit stick. I think I looked you up. You're currently what, a plus three handicap. You're competing in a lot of big time local events. Walk me through kind of what your golf calendar looks like.
Yeah. So last couple weeks on the weekends was playing state team for Argyle, Maryland state team. So we made it to the finals. We lost to Columbia this past Saturday.
Let's pause there. We'll talk a little bit about for folks that have never played in. I've never played in the state team finals where you're matching up clubs. What does that environment look like, and how competitive are those matches?
They're very competitive. I mean, you know, we played Norback, who we beat pretty good, and then we played Congressional and Manor in the round of 32 and the round of 16. Those were both really tight matches. So it's 18 total points. I think we won those two matches, 10.5, 7.5, and 11-7. So like those are really tight matches. Like when it's that tight, I think go either way. And then we beat Beaver Creek in the quarterfinals. Very competitive team always. We played really well that day. We beat them pretty good. And then we beat Pine Ridge, the public course up in Baltimore, 9.5, 8.5 in the semifinals to make it to the finals. Now then you have this whole week lead up, you know, that match is on a Sunday, the championship's on the next Saturday. So you have this whole week lead up where, you know, Argyle, we've never won the state team final. We've finished runner-up, I think now. We'll run up three of the last 5 years and five times total. So we've never won it. So I think it's kind of everyone leading up to it. You know, the whole week, everyone knows it's an important match. Everyone wants to play well.
Does the whole club kind of get behind you, or people paying attention?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a bunch of people out there watching, especially a lot of our friends that might not be playing on the team come out to support, you know.
Well, that's cool.
You know, my brother, my dad, they were here for the wedding, you know, they were all into it, even though they weren't out there watching because it was the day of my sister's wedding. You know, it's a big time. You, when you step on the first tee and you start playing, it's like I knew both the guys I was playing with. You know, we had little friendly conversations, but, you know, they want to beat me really bad and I want to beat them really bad that day. And, you know, we're trying to, you know, we're just all we can really control is our match. You know, you just try and really focus on winning the points in your match. And hopefully the rest of your team can kind of take care of the rest. So that was this weekend. So I'll play Belhaven this week, which we played every year. And then I'm playing the U.S. Open local qualifier at PBDI.
Nice.
I got to play.
Have you, pausing there, have you gotten, how close have you gotten to getting through to sectionals?
I think I missed it by a shot. Maybe two shots last year, shot the year before. A lot of the years before that, I really didn't even play in it. I caddied for Denny a lot of times in the sectional qualifier at Woodmont, probably like five or six times. So I'd rather, at that time, I would have rather done that to actually, you know, have a chance to push him through to the U.S. Open than me go there. And I don't think I'm making the U.S. Open. So
yeah.
I just kind of want to play. I think playing in sectionals would be great. And, you know, then if you play that day and you play great, who knows? But I don't think it's happening. that would be dangerous for people at Shinnecock if it did. So, they'll play that, and then so I'm playing a Maryland AM Maryland Open qualifier, so hopefully play well there. And then if I play well there, I'll play in the Maryland AM and the Maryland Open.
Maryland Open, which one's at Argyle?
The Maryland Open's at Argyle. Yep.
When was the last time you guys hosted that?
A long time ago. We hosted the Maryland AM a couple of years ago. I think it was 2022. We hosted the Maryland AM. So and now we're hosting the Maryland Open. So, and then besides those, I'll play the U.S. Mid-Am qualifier. And then in August, I'll play the Sonny Hanna four ball with Pat, which is a good event. They started a couple of years ago. And then I'll probably play the Delaware Amateur too down at Rehoboth. So that'll be, I think that's, and I'm going to play the Mid-Atlantic Mid-Am since I'm the defending champ. I got to play that.
Right. Right. Yeah. So last year was the first iteration of that, right?
Yeah, it used to be the WMGA Mid-Am, so WMGA shut down. So it's the it's the same event. It's just now renamed the Mid-Atlantic Mid-Am. So it's the same format. One day, 36 holes. Kind of just spin around for 36 holes and crown champion.
Did you get a pretty good turnout for that last year?
Yeah, it sells out every year. I mean, it's a great event because really there's not that much stuff for mid-ams to play in locally. Like, there's the Maryland State mid-am, which I don't think I'll play this year because it's not a date that's not going to work. And then there's the Mid-Atlantic, that mid-am event. And then there's like a mid-am qualifier. And then besides that, everything else is playing against college kids, you know, Maryland Am, Maryland Open, stuff like that. You got to qualify for those. So there's not Belhaven, a lot of mid-ams playing that. There's not a wide schedule for a lot of the mid-ams unless you really want to go travel, which is sure. A little bit more difficult with three kids.
Yeah. Did I see that you're on the board or some kind of leadership capacity now with the Mid-Atlantic Golf Association? Is that right?
Yeah. I joined the board for the Mid-Atlantic last year. So this is, I'm like 18 months into it.
What is everything that the Mid-Atlantic Golf Association does? They just kind of run a few of these tournaments, or is there more than that?
No. Mike Cumberpatch is in charge of kind of running the Mid-Atlantic. Mike's a great guy. So we run, I think, about 7 or 8 events, the biggest being the Mid-Atlantic Amateur, which has been around for, a long, long time. Was at Congressional last year, Columbia the year before. It's going to be at Woodholm this year. And then they run, a senior event, a senior am, a mid am event, that four ball event, mid am senior four ball. Mike's starting a new event this year, a team championship, which will be actually really cool, that Columbia is going to host at the end of October, which will be a 4-person team and, kind of counting the 2 best scores. So that should be a lot of fun. But really, the main thing, of the Mid-Atlantic Golf Association is to push, amateur golf in this area forward. And for a long time, the Mid-Atlantic Golf Association ran a lot of the USGA qualifiers in the area. And then with the Allied Golf Associations, a lot of that has really gone to the MSGA, now the Maryland State. So, but the Mid-Atlantic will still administer 3 or 4 USGA qualifiers a year, including the setup at Woodmont for the sectionals every single year.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It does seem like there seems to be an opportunity to get some more events out there. What I found interesting, especially in this kind of era of social media and everything else, it feels like some of these tournaments could do a little bit, and maybe not all of them want to, but a little bit better job of marketing themselves, so that I'm sure that the inner circles of the local, the top-notch players locally are all aware of the circuits. I'm not sure Joe Blow golfer sometimes is even aware of every single one of these events. And some of them, like even just myself as covering as Beltway golfer, some of the events are great to watch. And you can go and see some great golf with no ropes and see some dynamite golf.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really, really good golf, especially like when you get like watching, final groups at some of these events, Maryland Open, Maryland Am, Mid-Atlantic Am. I mean, there's some really, really good golf. There's a lot of really good players in this area that have, that I know how good they are, and they go travel and they qualify for big events and they play well at big events, around the country. But we have a lot of really good players in this area.
You're also on the board at Argyle Country Club. Is that right?
I was for 6 years. So from, I guess it was from 2018 through 20 and like through the beginning of 2024. So I was the president for the last 2 years on that. So like 2022 and 2023, I was the president.
Okay. So you were involved when you guys decided to do your most recent renovation.
Yes, I was very involved.
So walk us through that kind of process of that decision making, and did it take much convincing of the membership? And we hit on it before. You brought Joel Wyman in and his design group to come in and give the course an update. Like what is walk us through what that process of kind of selling the membership on doing a renovation? And like, for instance, how long was the course shut down for that?
Yeah, sure. It was a multi-year process. So it started probably real conversations about it in 2020, 2021. We had a very outdated sprinkler and irrigation system to start with that, you know, was almost 50 years old. They're supposed to, you know, be replaced every 30 to 40 years. So it started before we could even, you know, we ended up deciding to switch to a hybrid Bermuda and redo the bunkers and, you know, add some new tees. That was kind of the end product. But to get there, we needed to first do a full-blown irrigation project to be able to, you know, to sprig the Bermuda grass in and keep it wet enough to do that, which needed a new irrigation system. Our old irrigation system would not have been able to do that. Mm. And we needed to add in a lot of drainage around the course, which we would have to do for, you know, ryegrass, which we used to have, or Bermuda grass, which we switched to. So it started off with kind of the planning aspect. Then how are we going to fund it? Refinancing debt. We had a cell phone tower on our property that we sold. And so we were able to create the capital, not assess any of the membership. So that was a big thing in convincing the membership, you know, to move forward with it, is that, you know, it's not going to cost you any dollars out of your pocket. This is all going to be paid for by the club.
That sounds like a good investment. So you guys had a cell phone tower built at some point and then sold it?
Yeah, it was built in like the 80s or 90s. And essentially they trade like real estate buildings where there's an income coming off the cell phone tower. You can sell that income stream for a, you know, a cap rate and, you know, collect that that cash. And we were able to put that cash to pretty much pay for our new irrigation system. Yeah.
Savvy.
And so we were able to do that. And we only shut down for about 9 weeks in the summer of 2024. So we did a couple different phases of bunkering before we actually sprigged the grass to Bermuda in 2024. But we were essentially started killing the grass on the course beginning of May. Course was open through the middle of June. So 6 weeks as the grass on the fairways was kind of wilting away. It was still playable. And then we were closed from, call it, the end of June through Labor Day, and it reopened Labor Day.
So that sounds like a pretty easy sell. I mean, if it's not going to cost membership anymore and you're only going to be closed 9 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, compared to a lot of renovations.
The biggest thing for us is that, you know, we had ryegrass, rye Poe mix. And I mean, I think everyone here around this area has been to courses where in the summer, like, we've got these 100 degree weeks where it rains every night. And, yeah, you know, ryegrass and Poe just don't really survive that in this area. So we would have summers where, you know, our course would be great until July 4th. And then that weather pattern would start. And we'd just have a lot of areas in the fairways that would kind of burn out and die. And there's not that much you can really do for that until, you know, the middle of September when you can start seeding it. So you just have, you know, part of your main golf season in the summer in this area that the grass just wasn't, the course was in poor shape. So now with the Bermuda grass, you know, we've already greened up this year. In the last 2 weeks, we're almost 100% green at Argyle with all the warm weather. And now our fairways will be good to go through, call it, you know, the middle of November. Now they'll stay green until at least Halloween, and then they'll start to kind of gradually turn brown throughout November, but still a very playable surface during that time.
So the membership is sounds like pleased. Everyone's happy with the work that was done.
Well,
the work that
you can't make everyone happy.
Sure. Understood. How about, so we actually have, we're coming out with our first issue, the Beltway Golfer magazine, later this spring.
Yeah.
And a member at Argyle, Rob Runyon, has a piece in the first issue about Argyle's ability to foster really good young players and turn them into college players. Can you talk a little bit about kind of what Argyle does especially to bring in and create really good young players?
Yeah, so I think it, you know, when I was a kid, it was a different model than it is now. So when we were kids, we, like I mentioned before, we just had all these families with these kids around, you know, the same, you know, anywhere from 5 to 6 years older than me to 5 to 6 years younger than me. And we just had this huge group that was up there all the time. So I don't know if you remember the name Kyle Stowe. He went to the University of Virginia. Mm-hmm. Kyle was a really, really good junior and amateur player from this area, went to the University of Virginia. So he was, about 3 years older than me. And so he was kind of, you know, he made it to U.S. Juniors and he was playing AJGA. And so he was kind of someone that I think we all like looked up to and was like, oh man, like we can, competitive golf is fun. So, you know, you start playing with better players like him and like some of the A-team guys, like I mentioned, but you know, we were playing golf just all the time and we made golf fun. I think playing golf by yourself can be difficult sometimes to have fun just to practice by yourself. And so when you have that group of, you know, like, oh, let's go play. And it's like your friends and you're playing little, you know, little small games. Like we used to play putting contests for slushies or milkshakes just to make it, you know, on our parents' accounts, like it was ours. And so like, you know, just little things like that to stay competitive. And then, you know, my parents signed us up for, at the time it was called the Titleist Tour, which was around the area. So we'd go play, and my brother and a lot of us would go play Titleist Tour events. We played Interclub. Back then they had Interclub where you would play, you know, against other clubs in the area. They had a 16, 17 division, a 14, 15, and a 13 under, similar to A-team, just, you know, two person best ball, sort of matches with an individual match. So we did that. And then that model's kind of changed over time at Argyle. At some point, I think it was in the mid-2010s, they introduced the junior membership at the club, which essentially allowed kids to join under the age of, you can do it till you're 21, from the age of 13 to 21, where your parents don't have to be a member. So instead of your parents having to pay the, you know, whatever it is in full dues to be a member and initiation fee, we created a membership category that was just for these kids. And, you know, a lot of these kids, what you end up getting is kids that really want to play golf and want to be good golfers, right? And
that's the piece that sounds really unique.
Yeah, and I think we're probably the only club in the area that really offers that. And you know, and they can't play on weekend mornings. They can't play in prime times, but they have full access to the club. They have full access to the practice facilities. You know, and very rarely do you have a kid that's you know, a problem, I would call it, because you know, they're around. They, you know, when you're around other golfers and, you know, other adult golfers, you know, you kind of see how they're acting, how I'm supposed to act here. I mean, that's the one thing about golf, you know, being around people, like you just kind of, you kind of follow what everyone else is doing, right? And so that's really opened up, it's opened up a good membership flow for the club too, because a lot of these, what happens is a lot of these kids, they come up to Argyle, they make great friends. And then, you know, their friends, if they're living in this area, they're like, oh man, I spent all my time at Argyle. Like I'm going to be a member at Argyle when I'm, you know, out of college. And so, you know, that program produced Brian Kim, Jake Griffin. I don't know if you remember Matt Barnes, who was a really, really good player. He won the DC Amateur.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of really good players kind of come through that, just having access to golf.
What does the club championship look like with all these good players?
Yeah, the club championship's tough. We have a lot of really good players. It's, you know, 18-hole match play. Anything can happen. So I've only ever won it once. A lot of times, unfortunately for me, I've had a lot of conflicts that I can't play. Like I couldn't play last year, couldn't play the year before. But, you know, in any given year, you could have seven. I think last year when I couldn't play, there were seven or eight guys that all played in the Maryland Am and Maryland Open playing in the club championship. So, I mean, that's a pretty high level golf tournament.
When was the last time Denny was allowed to play in the club championship?
Oh, you probably last won it in 2014 or 15, 13 or 14, something like that.
Oh, wow. So, and how old would he have been?
He would have been in college then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. And making the A team, I mean, just that, how many guys are on the A team?
Yeah, it's 11 plus the pro.
Okay. Oh, that's more than I realized. But that's got to be pretty
yeah, it's competitive. It's very competitive.
Yeah.
It's definitely very competitive.
And Argyle, so you guys also in recent years, it sounds like it's time-wise, it was likely while you were on the board, brought in the Howard golf team and gave them some access. What does that program look like?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, they've got their men's and women's program that come up there. They're up there a lot of like weekday afternoons, I would say, kind of after their classes and stuff. So it's just it works out well for both, you know, them and for the club, because a lot of, you know, the weekday afternoons aren't like at 3, 4 o'clock aren't the busiest times, you know. It's a lot of times where like people might be just going up and they want to go practice after work or go swing, go play a quick nine holes. So, yeah, they've been great. I mean, they've been using the club, practicing, using the range. They use, you know, tee times. They'll play on like weekend afternoons too. So I think it's been a really good spot for them to kind of, you know, improve their program.
Okay, so they also hosted the, what is the name of their conference? The NEC or MEAC?
Yes. I think it's the NEC. Year.
I was up there for when they won their conference championship that was hosted at Argyle.
Yep.
So that seemed to be benefiting quite a bit.
Yeah.
So you going back to the family a little bit, you mentioned your sister got married this past weekend, so the family was up there. So you had you mentioned you had to move around your Maryland team matches a bit just to make the crazy schedule work.
Yeah, so we won the semifinals, I guess would have been 10 days ago now, like that Sunday, and then the other semifinal was Baltimore Country Club versus Columbia, and Columbia won. And I've got two cousins that were playing for Columbia. And so the matches typically are 12:30, the championship match, 11:30 or 12:30 start. And my sister was getting married at 5:00 in DC. So that was just, I was a groomsman in the wedding. So that was just not going to work. So as soon as we both won, I was texting their pro and some of the guys on their team, like, hey, would you guys be open to moving this match up to, like, you know, in the morning, like 8:30? And I figured they would be, so they could keep two of their better players playing, and then I could play. And then they had another player on their team that had their daughter's baptism at 1:30, so they were all about it. And so it was, you know, it was good sportsmanship by and everything by them and us to try to play the matches at much of full strength as you could.
That the logistics of club golf and amateur golf, you know, you gotta move things around life.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like, you know, if you play in a PGA Tour event, you can't ask to change your tee time. People ask to change their tee time. Like my daughter's got this that morning. I really want to play in this event. Can I play the afternoon? And that's the sort of stuff that happens a lot of times. You know, you just like it's logistics.
Sure. I did. Can you verify? I did get a text. There was a rumor that with your brother being in town for the wedding that he shot a 59 at Argyle on Friday. Is there any truth to that?
That's untrue. I played with him. He shot 62 and he didn't shoot 59.
62. Still pretty good.
Yeah. Still pretty good.
What is Argyle's course record? Who holds that?
There's like four of us. Me.
You're one of them. Nice.
One of them, yeah, me, Denny, Jake Griffin, Brian Kim. I think all four of us have shot 61.
Oh, that's a murderer's row there. Brian Kim, of course, is he's at Duke, one of the better college players in the country.
Yeah, he's a junior. He's a junior at Duke.
And Jake Griffin, he won a Maryland Am, played at Penn State. Is he kind of doing the amateur tour now, or is he trying to make it as a pro?
He's trying to make it as a pro.
Nice.
Yeah.
So is he on doing mini tour stuff, or where is he?
Yeah, he was down in Florida playing a bunch of different stuff. So I think he's going to be back up in this area for the summer.
Well, listen, unless I missed anything, I do have to note, I did, you know, I was scrolling through your social media, and I want to acknowledge I lost my mom about a year and a half ago. I saw that the mother of your family passed recently. So my condolences. You know, certainly think about my mom every day. Never gets easier. So sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
I wish you best of luck, man. I'll come out Belhaven two ball. It is open to the public. People can go out and watch. It is fun to walk around and you see some dynamite golf. So
yeah, you can see some really high end golf. Yeah, there's a lot of really good players playing.
Well, Ryan, I really appreciate you taking some time on short notice to join the program, and good luck this week and good luck with the rest of your year.
All right, Alex, appreciate it. Thanks.